y'all. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. It just so happens to be my show, A Voice for Print, and yet you're listening. The phone number is 877-973-7425. If you would like to call in and chat with me, Face for Radio, Voice for Print, here we go. I got to play this audio from Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, who is in an unenviable position at the moment.
But is it fair to say you're getting close with this flight and perhaps others to getting every American who wants to leave Afghanistan out of the country? Are you close?
That's what we're working toward. Absolutely.
And are you close now?
We're getting closer.
Or closer. Just the tip. The iceberg. They're having trouble here. My friend Josh Hammer has a piece at the New York Post. The headline is, "When is a hostage not a hostage when Biden is in charge?" Uncle Joe's approval ratings have been cratering of late, sitting at 4.2% underwater in the Real Clear Politics polling average as of this writing. Wait a second. Let's see what it is now. RealClearPolitics.com. Polling Biden job approval. It's still holding. Negative 4.2%. It's no great secret why. An epically botched Afghanistan withdrawal that has irreparably sullied America's already tarnished reputation on the world stage. Directly emboldened our Chinese Communist Party geopolitical arch foe. Beclowned many of our leading government officials. Revealed the pitfalls of moralistic nation-building crusades, and more generally, been such an extraordinary debacle so as to be an impeachable offense for President Biden. The worst aspect of this sordid affair has been the administration's outright deceit on the matter of its single greatest failure, its inability to adequately ensure that all American civilians were properly evacuated before the last U.S. military plane left Kabul. "We're going to stay to get them all out," Biden told ABC News' George Stephanopoulos on August 19th about Americans stranded in Afghanistan. We now know that was a monstrous lie. As was made clear this past week, horrific reports of the now reigning Taliban not permitting stranded Americans to fly out. And it is now a monstrous lie that the administration is clumsily doubling down on, clinging to the hope that sufficient gaslighting might persuade Americans not to believe their eyes. The disgraced Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, had the temerity to assert that he is not aware of anyone being held on an aircraft or any hostage-like situation. We got a problem. There are Americans stuck in Afghanistan. The Taliban is today saying that they will allow them to leave unless they're Afghan green card holders to the United States, allegedly. There have been planes in Afghanistan that have been loaded with American citizens ready to leave, and the Taliban has not left the planes to depart. And do you know there were actual members of the media who said, "Well, they're not stopping the people from leaving. They're just stopping the planes." They're legitimately, I am not BSing you, that actually happened. Blue check marked American journalists on Twitter in defense of the Biden administration claiming that, well, they're not stopping the people from leaving. They're just stopping the planes from leaving. As if the people can get themselves out of Afghanistan without being on the planes. And now you've got Jen Psaki at the White House when asked how close we are to getting people out. So, we're getting closer every day. We're getting closer. This was, as Josh Hammer said, a monstrous lie from the administration. This was a situation where the administration knew. They knew it, that they weren't going to be able to fulfill the goal, and they couldn't do it without troops on the ground to help them. In fact, let me play you again Blinken, yesterday, the Secretary of State, had the audacity to say this.
Without personnel on the ground, we can't verify the accuracy of manifests, the identities of passengers, flight plans, or aviation security protocols. So this is a challenge.
Duh! What did you think was going to happen? So now notice this. How little the mainstream media outlets of the world are covering it anymore. So what are they covering? Global warming, climate change, abortion, culture war stuff, where they think they can hurt the Republicans. That's what they're doing. And they're doing it by design, because they got to help Joe Biden. Because if they don't help Joe Biden, the Republicans really could take back the Senate. Not just the House. They could make gains at the gubernatorial level. It's all political for them. They don't care about the Americans left behind. It's not just Biden who doesn't care. It's the American media at this point. They've moved on. You know, believe it or not, I shouldn't say I couldn't care less. But the media, CNNs of the world, even the ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS, they are obsessed with Tucker Carlson's ratings. They are obsessed with the number of people who watch Tucker Carlson and Fox News in general and their own ratings. Do you know more Americans still get their news from the ABC Nightly News than from many of them? More Americans get their news from what David Muir on ABC and Lester Holt on NBC and whoever this week's anchor is on CBS, then get news from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. Most Americans watch their local news, and then they watch the evening news, and then they're done. They've consumed it, or they watch the Today Show, Good Morning America, CBS This Morning. It makes me wonder sometimes, why does CBS even have news networks? You know, so Talkers Magazine, which is kind of the Bible of talk radio, says that I am now the 26th most listened to host in America. I've got 2.25 million people who are listening to me. My boss in Atlanta told me yesterday I'm the number one show in Atlanta. There are more people who will listen to me in this segment than will watch a show on CNN or MSNBC. Now, it doesn't matter to them. They don't care about it because they don't listen to talk radio. I got a bigger audience than they do, though. My point here, though, is that most Americans, even with my audience listening to me here, or even with CNN's audience, even with Tucker Carlson's audience, the largest show on cable TV, more Americans still get their news from the 30 minutes that ABC and NBC and CBS offer after the local news. And what are those networks covering now? They're not covering Afghanistan. It's disappeared. They're certainly covering the Texas abortion law. Americans who are otherwise uninterested in news are being fed propaganda, but there's a problem. We know now, and we know going back even before Donald Trump was elected in 2016, that the media really can't control the narrative anymore. When it was ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS, and you did not have cable, and you had the Fairness Doctrine, you didn't have talk radio, you didn't have Rush Limbaugh, the media could really control the news. Whatever was on the front page of the New York Times became the lead story in the nightly national, international news, and they set the narrative. And oftentimes, Republicans were able to bypass that to their audience, but it really only became easier with the rise of talk radio and Fox News, and now the internet. Now, unfortunately, some people abuse your trust. Some people lie to you. You don't even know you're being lied to. There's a lot of propaganda out there, a lot of nonsense, misinformation, disinformation out there that crops up in circles on the right and on the left. And it happens a lot on the left, and they refuse to admit it because the media treats it as true. Look at the ivermectin story and Rolling Stone and MSNBC and Occupy Democrats and all out of Oklahoma, a story that was thoroughly debunked, and they're still doubling down on it. Because in their reality, which is not really reality, it's bat poop crazy nonsense, they think it's true. But it's always important to understand what are the big three and PBS covering. I've always wondered why Fox doesn't take that first 30 minutes of Bret Baier's show on Fox News and package it as a nightly news on Fox TV for some counter programming. They never have. They never will. But it's really hard, even though they've shut out the story, they can't keep people from talking about the story because you are now more likely in the modern age to pay attention to what your friends say on Facebook or Twitter. Part of our problem is also part of our solution. One of our problems as society right now is that we have built for ourselves communities online. Now, our community online isn't going to come walk our dog or feed our cat or check on our house when we're out of town. We've isolated ourselves from our next door neighbor while we built an online community. And part of our problem is that our online community looks a whole lot like us, thinks a whole lot like us, is rarely open to being challenged to other ideas. It's true, whether you want to believe it or not. But it's also the solution in that stories that we used to not hear about, now we don't bypass those stories because the mainstream media may choose not to cover the story, but I can talk about them here. You can talk about them with your friends. Oftentimes we talk about stuff here nobody in conservative talk radio is talking about. The solution and the problem are kind of the same thing. But we have a hostage crisis in Afghanistan. The hostage crisis in Afghanistan exists because the president of the United States of America was negligent and derelict in his duties in getting Americans safely out of the country. He told the world community and American citizens in an interview with ABC News that he would not leave Afghanistan until every American citizen was out of Afghanistan. And that wasn't true. He told George Stephanopoulos we would stay beyond August 31st if there were Americans left. And that was not true. And because he screwed up, because of his lie, Americans are left behind. In fact, we're hearing from more and more of these Americans, they were never even told they needed to go to the airport. If anything, they were told to stay put. Notice how you haven't heard a ton of that in the media, except on Fox News. Remember the obsession from Brian Stelter and CNN and the like, oh, Fox is not covering this story. Now CNN's the one not covering the story. But the story's still getting covered. The story's still getting told. There is a hostage crisis. Josh Hammer is right. There's a hostage crisis in Afghanistan. The Taliban is not letting Americans out. They're not letting American green card holders out. They're not letting citizens of Afghanistan who helped the United States out of Afghanistan. We can't verify the people on the planes. We're having to send them now to other countries. We can't bring them now here directly because we can't verify their identities. So for security, we got to send them somewhere else. We sent some people here. We've had to send them back because it turned out they weren't who they said to be. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try to get out of Afghanistan, the Afghans who helped us, who will now otherwise be slaughtered. But it does mean we got to do a good job. But all of it has been compromised because of the incompetence of the president of the United States. And so the media of the United States would choose to move on and focus on Texas and misreport the story in Texas about the abortion law so that they don't have to dwell on the fact that their president, who they put time and energy into getting elected, lost us Afghanistan and handed it back to the Taliban. I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my ex chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my ex chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchaireric.com now. That's the letter X chair, E-R-I-C-K.com. For $100 off your order, X Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X Chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchaireric.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X Chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Take my advice. Get an X Chair. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number, should you wish to be a part of the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I wonder what Joe Biden, you know, he's going to speak later today. I thought it was yesterday, but it's going to be today. He's going to speak about the White House new steps in fighting the virus. And essentially, he's just going to double down on everything that's been done before. And he's going to mandate federal vaccines for federal employees and the like. This came up at the White House a short time ago in the White House press conference. I'm going to play you this clip. I haven't actually heard it. I've read the transcript. But I want to play this for you because there's a couple points that need to be made. This is Jen Psaki in the White House press conference.
Afghans who work for the United States out of the country, they've been cooperative.
That's what the statement conveys, yes.
And then on a different topic, the president's speech this afternoon, the president's going to sign an executive order. Has he signed yet the executive order on for mandating vaccination for the federal workforce?
I would have to check on that, Zeke. That is the one piece of news that has been fully confirmed out there, which I can give a little bit more detail on, and I can check whether he had signed it this morning or whether he's planning to sign it after the speech.
Exceptions for people who have religious objections or medical reasons not to get the vaccine?
Yes, there will be limited exceptions for legally recognized reasons, such as disability or religious objections. I know you have all seen the reporting on this, but let me just give you a few top lines of it. So how this will work is the task force, the interagency task force, will provide a ramp-up period, and we expect federal employees will have about 75 days to be fully vaccinated. That gives people more than enough time, in our view, to start and complete their vaccination series. If a federal worker fails to comply, they will go through the standard HR process, which includes counseling, and face disciplinary action, face progressive disciplinary action. Each agency is going to work with employees to make sure they understand the benefits of vaccination and how the vaccines are free, easy, and widely accessible. But it will start to be applied once the executive order is signed.
So there you go. Joe Biden, he's going to force every federal employee to get a vaccine, or any contractor, if I understand it right, contractor as well, who has direct engagement with the federal government, the military as well, forced to get vaccines. Now, the military, they're forced to get everything. The military is forced to even get the anthrax vaccine. So it's not out of the ordinary for a soldier to be forced to get a vaccine, whether they like it or not. It is out of the ordinary for everybody else to. I still think the vaccine mandates are a bad idea. You should incentivize it. And essentially, just to repeat for those of you who haven't heard me say this before, instead of mandating vaccines, I think what you should do is say, if you get COVID, you have to take sick days. And if you don't have sick days, you take vacation days. And if you don't have vacation days, you lose your pay for each day you miss. And you can't come back until you get a negative COVID test. If you have gotten the vaccine, you don't have to take any additional time off. You just get to take the time off and stay out. And that incentivizes people, and it puts the burden on those who decide not to get the vaccine. I think when people are losing their job over this, particularly when I think we all have to acknowledge the federal government itself has not done a very good job of reassuring people over time, particularly with either making their statements about rushing it or changing their mind on things. I get people's qualms. I personally think that it's safe. I personally think it's worth getting. I personally think much of the information I get from people is nonsense. And I don't mean that to insult any of you, but every single day people send me stuff and say, well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? And it's all stuff that's been debunked. And I just don't have the time or energy anymore to keep debunking stuff for people who just keep willfully trying to come up with excuses not to get it. If you don't want to get it, though, I don't think you should be punished. I don't think you should be fired. I don't think you should lose your job. I think the consequences come from you get sick. I saw data. I'm here in Georgia, and I saw data yesterday that in Georgia, 98% of people on ventilators in the state right now due to COVID are unvaccinated. And in Georgia, 98% or 97% of people in ICU with COVID are unvaccinated. I mean, you bore the burden of the risk, and those people wound up getting in the hospital. I got a prayer request this morning from a group that's asking for prayers for a dad. He's got a toddler, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and he's on a ventilator with COVID. And it's horrible. It's awful. I don't think you should ridicule people because someone convinced them not to get the vaccine. I think we should figure out who's doing the convincing and be bothered by those people. But oftentimes it's as easy as I'm healthy and the data says it's not going to hurt me. And so they choose not to. Don't punish those people. When I was in college and law school and I was actually interested in finance and the like, I was obsessed with CNBC coverage. And I pay attention to what Jim Cramer says. I don't always agree with him. Not really a fan, but I do pay attention to what he says. He's got a popular CNBC show, and CNBC has this list of the six reasons Jim Cramer's concerned about the stock market in September. Now, I want to check in here. It's 2:35 p.m., and this is what, the Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're fourth straight day of the Dow being down. It's down 136 points now. NASDAQ down 11. S&P 500 down 15. Cramer says these, his reasons. One is negative pre-announcements. PPG, Sherwin-Williams, and Pult Group, home builder, pre-announced lower guidance about the third quarter, warning supply chain problems, materials costs are causing challenges. The Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is probably going to change his stance on inflationary pressure, which gets to higher rates. And according to Cramer, quote, if rates are headed higher, that creates more competition for high yield dividend stocks these days. Not many stocks are supported by their yields, but there will be even fewer if rates go up. Four is Congress. The Democrats want this $3.5 trillion package. The level of spending would probably create jobs and overheat the economy, dumps too much money into the economy, too much of a stimulus. Number five is new companies going public through special purpose acquisition companies or traditional IPOs or adding supply of stock to the market that serves as a wet blanket, dousing the fires of buyers. And six are the geopolitical worries. Jim Cramer is concerned about China and the unpredictability of its president, particularly as relates to Taiwan. All of this causes market instability. But wait, there's more. I got to play you a couple of pieces of audio. It is very clear from these sound bites what's going on here. First of all, here's Jen Psaki.
Brian will discuss the details of the data, namely that beef, pork, and poultry are the real drivers of increased grocery store bills.
And to her credit, Brian, the Biden Labor Secretary, listen to this.
What we need to do is continue to move our economy forward. We need to continue to get people back in the workplace. We need to continue to keep industry moving forward. We can't afford a shutdown like we had a year ago or a year and a half ago now this time. I was in a different role. I was the mayor of Boston back then. And when we shut down the economy or shut down the city, it was devastating to so many businesses. We just need to continue to move one step in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. The president has a plan. He's going to continue on his plan. The stock market, for the most part, is doing great. Every day, it's still moving forward, so there's confidence there. Wages are up, but yes, we're dealing with a little bit of inflation. But I think that we've never lived through times like this. We've never had to recover from a pandemic like this.
I played the clip in the wrong order. That was the Labor Secretary, though, saying that lockdowns hurt and there's inflation. But now let's jump back again to Brian Deese. He is the director of the National Economic Council for Joe Biden.
The context here is appropriate focus on the question of grocery prices and the increase in grocery prices that we have seen recently over the last couple of months. And if we unpack that, one of the interesting findings of the report that we put out today is that about half of the overall increase in grocery prices can be attributed to a significant increase in prices in three products, in beef, in pork, and in poultry. And in beef and in pork, we've seen double-digit increases in prices over the last couple of months. In fact, if you look at the category that is grocery prices, what economists call food at home, so food that is being purchased to eat at home, in a number of areas we've seen, if you take out those three categories, we've actually seen price increases that are more in line with historical norms. And we've seen some categories, for example, fresh fruits and vegetables prices have actually declined since the end of last year. And if you look at a category of prices like eggs, Obviously, a similar supply chain, similar input and feed costs to poultry. The price of eggs has actually come down over the last couple of months. The real driver is in these three areas, these three proteins. If you look at that market, the thing that is striking is across beef, poultry, and pork, significant consolidation in those industries. So anywhere from 55 to 85% of the market is controlled by the top four producers in those industries.
Okay, so that's Brian Deese of the National Economic Council. He's the director there. You heard Jen Psaki, and this is now their talking point. According to the White House, the reason we're seeing grocery store prices go up is because of beef, pork, and poultry. Oh, how do I do this without sounding concerned? Hey, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it anyway. When this administration was coming into office and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was declaring the Green New Deal, what's one of those things that they said? We need to eat less meat. We need to be more vegetarian. And this was highlighted by Republicans in the media. So, oh, no, no, no. That was a study out of some university. The Democrats, they don't want to do that. One of the very first things Joe Biden did when he became president was he canceled the Keystone XL pipeline and began shutting down leases to drill for oil and raising the cost of gas. Why? Because according to the Green New Deal, we need to stop using fossil fuels. And Joe Biden took actions in the economy to drive up the cost of fossil fuel to reduce the demand for fossil fuel. And so I don't believe it can be a coincidence that they come out with the Green New Deal and say we need to encourage vegetarianism in the country. And surprise, you hear the head of the Council of Economic Advisors say, well, you know, fruits and vegetable prices are going down. It's the beef, the pork, and the poultry prices that are going up. Could it be they're sabotaging the prices? Could it be they're taking steps through public policy to drive up the cost of beef, pork, and poultry? It cannot be anything more than coordination that Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, and Brian Deese, the head of the National Economic Council, are both out there saying, well, you know, vegetable prices, they're going down, but it's the beef, the pork, and the poultry that are going up. And grocery prices, they would otherwise be fine, except for that. That's where the grocery inflation is coming through. Remember earlier when people were expressing concerns about inflation, they said, well, it's the used car and the car prices. That's why there's inflation. It's the fuel prices as well. The fuel prices are going up. Otherwise, everything is fine. You take the grand totality of this and you see the Green New Deal policies coming in and they don't want to accept responsibility for it. They don't want to tie anything to it. They don't want to say it's about what they're doing. But I have a hard time at this point believing it's anything other than intentional. They send out a report. It says you got to eat less meat. The Democrats get big blowback to it. They say, well, it wasn't us. It was just an academic report of one of the things that we should do to reduce our carbon footprint. And now suddenly, again, from Jen Psaki,
Brian will discuss the details of the data, namely that beef, pork, and poultry are the real drivers of increased grocery store bills.
So if you stop buying the beef, pork, and poultry, like the left said they wanted you to do, your grocery store bill will go down. And hey, Brian Deese helpfully says vegetable and fruit prices, they've gone down. I mean, am I wrong here? This can't be a coincidence. It can't be a coincidence. They've been pushing for us to stop eating beef and pork and poultry. And just coincidentally, it turns out that those happen to be the three things at the grocery store prices are going up on. Why are the prices going up on those three things? Domestically produced, no less. Because of public policy. Because of public policy. In the same way, fuel prices have gone up because of public policy. Yes, right now, something like 3/4 of the Gulf of Mexico petroleum production is offline because of the hurricane. But you got to remember, it's the Biden administration. We were energy independent, and now the Biden administration is having to beg OPEC to pump out more gas because we're not there yet. I don't think it's coincidental. I truly don't believe it's coincidental. This is the problem. You can't trust when the left agitates so long and so vocally for certain things to happen, and then those things start happening. You can't really trust that, oh, well, it's just transitory inflation. It doesn't seem to be transitory inflation. You've got Biden's labor secretary, I played you the clip, saying, well, you know, we've got inflation, the lockdowns weren't good, and everything that's happening just happens to align with their goals. Everything aligns with what they want, but they get to blame other things. They get to blame the virus. They get to blame the economy. But what about the public policy? What about the supplies, the regulations, the corn prices? You know, the corn prices go up. That causes the beef price to go up. And it's not actually, it's the manufacturing that's gone up. The farmers, the cattle farmers in this country are getting screwed. They're getting screwed. That's just the reality of it. The manufacturers are the butchers, and the production and the transport, those costs have gone up, and they're not passing any money on to the farmers. It's all the other costs. Now, why all the other costs? Why are those going up? Why not the actual cattle farming costs going up? One is labor shortage. They're having to pay more. The Biden administration has been pushing people to pay more. Two is fuel costs. The Biden administration implemented policies to raise fuel costs. Three is regulatory concern and regulatory control. The Biden administration has gone back to over-regulating and over-inspecting. That's driven up costs. All of these things contribute to higher beef, pork, and poultry prices. All of them contribute to the very thing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the left said they wanted to happen, so that you can eat less of it. And you know what happens here? Is it becomes a tax on poor people. And they don't really care. This is where the left's disconnect with climate change is they don't really care about costs going up for poor people, because they assume the government will just give you more money, and the government will give you more money to take care of those increased costs. And that's not what's working out here. Joe Manchin has said he's killing the deal. He's killing the $3.5 trillion deal. Chuck Schumer came out and said, we're not going to let him delay it. That's not how this works, Chuck. He's got a vote. He can kill it. You can't do all or nothing with Joe Manchin. And this comes at a time as they're beginning to agitate even further about climate change around the world. Even further about the need to decarbonize the economy. Listen, this is a Mondaire Jones, he's a congressman. Listen to this.
Well, time is running out and people are dying. People's properties have been damaged irreparably. And we must act for that reason to decarbonize our economy. And the great thing, John, is we can do this while creating millions of good paying union jobs in the green economy, which will give us a competitive advantage as compared to other people, other nations in the world. We can do all of these things. We can create hundreds of thousands of electric charging stations for vehicles. We can invest in an unprecedented way in renewable energy infrastructure, including wind and solar. We can do all of these things as part of this larger infrastructure package. And that is precisely what I believe we will do. I'm so proud of the president for his leadership in this area, as in so many other areas. And again, just extremely optimistic that we will meet this moment.
Right. We need to decarbonize. You know what's carbon? Cows, pigs, chickens. Got to decarbonize the economy. They ain't just talking fossil fuel here. They're talking the food that you eat. Meanwhile, you know, Joe Bastardi, he was on Fox News, meteorologist, talking about the extreme weather, and the left is right up there obsessed with tying this all into climate change. Listen to him.
Well, life has never been better on planet Earth, and that's because we adapt to whatever warming is actually taking place a lot better than if it actually got a lot colder. But let me just say this. I was with my father, who's a meteorologist, and I was with him Saturday night at a wedding. He said, Joe, just mentioned two names, Connie and Diane, 1955. And I said, you know, that's a good idea since Joe Biden comes from Scranton, Pennsylvania and lived in the Delaware River Valley. I was wondering if he had any idea what those two hurricanes did within 5 days of each other. They made Ida. Now, look, Ida was bad, but it was localized over New York City and North Jersey. We had an unbelievable situation in 55, and that was after the hurricane season of 54 that brought us Carol, which put Providence underwater, Edna, which hit Cape Cod, where Barack Obama is, and then Hazel, 54, 55, back-to-back on the eastern seaboard, unbelievable. How about 1933, September 4, 1933, two major hurricanes hitting the United States on the same day. The weather was hard to believe back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. I'm going to give you another example, folks. If you think it's bad now, let's look at Long Island out to Cape Cod. From 1938 to 1991, hit by a hurricane once every 7 years. Since 1991, have not been hit by a hurricane once. Even Henri, trying to come in from the Atlantic 2 weeks ago, fell apart trying to do it. How about wildfires, right? We all hear how bad wildfires are. They are a disaster where you get hit, folks. But this year is 86% of the average over the past 10 years acreage burnt, which is 20% of 1926 through 1935. 1955, the year of Connie and Diane, we had the same kind of tropical activity in the Pacific, same kind of pressure pattern in the Atlantic. What's the moral of this story? These things can be seen. They've happened right before, folks. They are not. I'm not going to say they're easy to predict because why I have a job.
You know, Jonah Goldberg wrote that book, Liberal Fascism, years ago. And one of the things he points out is that progressives never need a sense of history. They don't with the weather either. They look at weather events and every single weather event is, it's got to be global warming when you got Joe Bastardi out there with an encyclopedic mind and his dad pointing out, no, we've seen these sorts of things before, but you would never know it based on the rhetoric coming out. And then they never want to let a crisis go to waste. They want to take these storms and shape public policy and drive up the costs of chicken and beef and pork and tell you need to be a vegetarian. And when their policies actually succeed, it's not us. It's just the transitory, temporary inflation. But hey, have you seen the price of fruits and vegetables? Yeah, I don't think they're going to convert us into being vegans. They can do it themselves, but I don't think the rest of us are giving up our hamburgers. Progressivism is a religion. Y'all know that, right? It is secular atheist. There's no such thing as an atheist. I know some of you think you're an atheist. You worship something. Typically where you put your money is what you worship. You don't worship money. You worship whatever your money gets you. You know, I actually had somebody raise this point with me before. He said, I don't have time to spend my money on anything else. I got my power bill. I got my car. I got all this. So you worship yourself. Well, progressivism is a religion, and they've taken down the statue of Robert E. Lee. I'm not even going to get into Donald Trump's press release on this, but they're going to put a time capsule in its place. And what are they going to put in the time capsule? A kente cloth worn at the 400th commemoration of 1619, an LGBTQ pride pin, and an expired vial of COVID vaccine. They're putting those in the time capsule. Good grief. It is a religion. It is a cult. Their obsession with these things, it has religious significance for them. That's why they put things like that in a time capsule. You put in a time capsule the things you cherish. The 1619 Project, identity politics, COVID. I'm surprised they don't put a mask in as well. With a demand that the people who open it in 400 years mask up or else.